We should figure out 3-part harmony for that.
Barbershop style.
It's kind of barbershop.
Well, I feel like we're using our hushed tones because we are sitting in the middle of history right here.
Yeah, you're right. A listener had left a mysterious note saying we should check out the Kishwaukee Valley Heritage Society. I've driven past this place a lot and gone, I wonder if I'll ever get to go in there. I wonder what their hours are. But now I know, and it's totally worth it.
And then Dan, also, you said you drove by this place in Byron a bunch of times, never been there either.
Byron has a heritage museum, and my kids have been there because they went to the high school, or, you know, they went to school there. And I've never been in there, 25 years. And
so we thought maybe we need to stop by some of these little museums.
Well, I think that's an interesting, each town, a lot of towns have these little historical museums that are very quiet, sort of unassuming, and, you know, we never get an opportunity to look at them.
I'm Dan Wykes, and I'm the educator for the Byron Museum of History. The reason a lot of people come here is because it's an Underground Railroad site that's listed with the National Park Service.
Right.
They call it the Underground Network to Freedom. And so I have the, you know, the park stamp that people want.
Right, for their passports?
Yeah, for their passports.
Right.
And so that's a primary thing. They also come here because it's a record of early baseball. You know, there's a history with that here.
Yeah, I had no idea that Spalding was from here.
A.G. Spalding, and there's a stone down in the corner here next to the bar here that says birthplace of A.G. Spalding.
Wow.
So A.G. Spalding, Albert G. Spalding, was on one of the first professional teams in the area, the Rockford Four Cities.
Mm-hmm. For baseball, right?
For baseball. And then, of course, in 1871 was the Chicago Fire. So that kind of messed up all of the area league teams.
Right.
And so he went to Boston after that. But in the meantime, he and his brother started up a sporting goods company to make the official ball, because you can't have a national league if everybody's using a different
right.
ball.
Right.
And so that's how A.G., the Spalding Sporting Goods, started. They made a ball that they donated to each of the national teams.
Oh, kind of like the first taste for free. And then
Yeah.
They had to buy the next.
Yeah, so
smart.
So people come here to see, not that we have any actual artifacts of his, but just the fact that he was born in Byron, and we know the history of it.
Right.
And the Spalding family has a history here as well.
Okay.
So if you want, we can wander down to that. And this is the one that we've most recently redone, is the Underground Railroad exhibit, which is in the Reed House at the end of this hallway.
I was going to ask, because driving up, it looked like that was an older house right on the corner there.
Yeah, and now it's connected through the breezeway here.
And that was the house that was on the Underground Railroad?
Yep, 1843. When they converted this place to a museum up there in the Reed House, that had been a bar for many years. In fact, REO Speedwagon played in there. Yeah, and so did...
You buried the lead on that.
who am I thinking of? Rick Nielsen.
Cheap Trick
played in there, too.
Shocking.
Because I interviewed one of the older people here, said, oh, yeah, we'd go there, and he was there when Cheap Trick was playing, and the bass player did one of these numbers, and it had a hung ceiling at the time, and the neck went right up and stuck up there, and he couldn't get it out.
Wow, and that was in the Reed House?
Yes.
So it went from a Underground Railroad to REO Speedwagon to a museum
story.
Yeah, and who else played up there? Who am I thinking of? Motor City Madman, the guy that does the archery.
Oh, Ted Nugent.
Ted Nugent was in there.
Perfect.
Incredible. Wow.
It's a good thing he didn't know what the history of the place was.
Being close to Chicago, they could get acts like that because on the off days.
Right.
You know, because they play in... Yeah. And, of course, Cheap Trick was from Rockford anyway.
Mm-hmm. A lot has happened in this place.
We're going to pass through the baseball hall here. So just as an aside, the local girls... Byron has always been a big proponent of girls' sports. And the Bittner Bakery girls were the same vintage as the Rockford peaches. And in fact, they did go up there and scrimmage with them.
Okay.
But of course, the peaches were a professional team.
Right.
So that's what this is all about.
So that's a picture from the 4019?
Yes.
Wow.
Maybe two or three of these women are still left in town.
Yeah.
They're in their 90s now.
Interesting.
Wow. But
I was going to say, I sort of recognize some Byron family faces there. Like, I could maybe place them with my kids' friends.
Barbara Spencer is still around. So there are a few. You might recognize a few of the last names if you're from this area.
Yeah. So now, tell us about this, Dan.
Okay, so what you just walked through is actually the back of the original Reed House.
Okay.
So there was no breezeway here back in the day before the Civil War.
No baseball exhibits.
Oh, no. Okay. None of that.
All right. And who were the Reeds?
So Lucius Reed, they came from out east, and they were, he was one of the first store owners in Byron. He had two families here, and so he and the stepchildren all lived in this house. So one of his daughters, Lydia, was the person who wrote about her firsthand experience with seeing freedom seekers mm-hmm. come into the backyard at night and get off of a wagon covered with straw and then enter the Reed basement. So under this floor, we can go down there, but there's a storm cellar. Mm-hmm. That's how they came into the building in secret. And people ask, well, why? Illinois was a free state. But the problem at the time was slave catching mm-hmm. was legal. And so it did have to be secret, even though this was a free state.
Right.
So they did everything at night and undercover and wearing disguises and using code words.
Amazing. Wow.
And all of that stuff. So because she's what they call a first person source, you know, in other words, it wasn't family history, it was
right.
her. She wrote it down. She became editor of the Byron newspaper
uh-huh.
and wrote the complete story out. That's why this is accepted as a national park site.
Was there concern that the people, other than the Reeds in Byron, would turn them in?
It was a possibility, but politically, it just so happened, like the rest of Northern Illinois, most people were anti-slavery.
Okay.
Now, not at all abolitionist.
Right.
That was another level, and they wouldn't really go with the likes of John Brown, but they were anti-slavery,
mm-hmm.
and it was organized through the local church. So here's Lucius Reed. He was one of the elders of the church, and Jared Sanford was the founder of Byron.
Okay.
Wow.
Along with his brother, and then these are some of the George Gemmell at the time that the Underground Railroad was passing. So they would make plans in the church for mm-hmm. how to get these people through town.
Mm-hmm.
And so this was one of the stations, what they call, that's code word, station.
Right. Where was the next stop? Where were they headed out of Byron?
Linville.
Linville.
Lindenwood.
Right.
Today we call it Lindenwood.
So not that far at all.
No. And if you think about, like, how far would you take a horse in winter, you know, 10, 15 miles.
Yeah.
And they were headed towards Lake Michigan, mostly Chicago, but also Milwaukee. So they really weren't going north. They were going east. And
okay.
the reason for that was they could mix with the free black population in Chicago, so the slave catchers uh-huh. would have a harder time. But also, if they decided that it was too risky living in Illinois, they were already on their way to British Canada, you know, and the way to get there was like go around Michigan.
Yeah.
And so they're already part of the way there.
What were the numbers of people who came through here?
Because nobody wrote anything down, because
right.
you were breaking federal law,
yeah.
We only have, today we call it hearsay. So we think about up this far north in Illinois, maybe a dozen a year.
Oh,
but a mid-state Illinois, mm-hmm. it would be more like 200 a year.
And mm-hmm. how many volunteers do you have any numbers on that? Like how many volunteers were helping on each stage? Like for example, how many people in Byron were?
So it would be all of these men and their families.
Right.
So that's like 15, 20 people.
And then presumably at every single station there was another.
Yes, and they would make connections with other people in the area. You know, they'd send a runner ahead with information saying that I've got three, well, they would have called them crates coming next week.
Oh.
Two large crates and one small crate, you know, which
and
actually...
two adults and a
yeah,
child.
Yeah, right, right. Wow. So they would use code.
Right.
But they would arrange, so the George Gemmell would talk to the Congregational Church over in Lindenwood or over in DeKalb County, and they would make these arrangements ahead of time.
And I just turned around and almost startled because I thought I was going to fall through a hole. There's a cool glass hole in the ground here where you can see down into the cellar.
You can stand on that.
I kind of don't want to.
Yeah.
It's nerve-wracking.
So we realized as people came here, the actual stairs being so steep, that would prevent a lot of people from going down there. So we said, well, at least let's let everybody have a peek. Said, well, let's put a hole in the floor.
Wow.
And this all comes from government grant money.
Wow.
Hold on, I got to get a picture of you again.
By the way, the monument over here, two blocks over, that's the oldest Civil War monument in Illinois.
Really?
Yes. Wow. And so that has the names of all these people I was talking about. People wonder, like, what is that doing in the middle of the neighborhood?
It does seem out of place.
It's because that's where that used to be the center of town.
Right, okay.
And since then, it's moved down to this over here. But it left the monument there in the middle of the street as a roundabout.
Is there any talk about moving it to a more... I mean, it's actually in a cool spot.
Yes, but...
People don't know it's there.
But politically speaking, they tried to do that, but the traditionalists said, oh, no.
Yeah.
That's where it was.
I can see that. I can understand that.
Yeah.
That's interesting that most cities have them, you know, right in the courthouse or something, but the Byron's is so old that they've moved the town.
That used to be, it's now just houses, but it used to be the town park, the central park. Yeah. Watch your head.
How often are you guys giving tours here?
I would say at least once a month. The other thing we do, though, is I have an outreach. And so I take this story as an outreach as often as people come here.
Mm-hmm. So you go out to schools and things like that?
Yep.
Wow, so we're here in the cellar now?
And civic groups, you know, men's clubs and things like that.
Yeah.
So this is actually the entryway. They come... That used to be the backyard.
Okay.
And so they would come down through this entryway. You know, if I were to open that, you just see some steps going out.
Right.
It's like a storm cellar. And it's not that they had to stay down here, but that's the way they came in.
Right.
Once they were upstairs, as long as you kept the drape shut, you were pretty safe.
Right.
You know, people get this idea that you had to put them into tunnels in secret rooms. That wasn't totally necessary up here because the slave catchers had to get a warrant before they could go into your house.
Okay.
And up here, being politically being what it was, in the time it took the slave catchers to go get a warrant, the people in the neighborhood would just, you know, move those people to the next spot.
Right.
So slave catchers didn't have a lot of luck here. Different story in Southern Illinois.
So we're asking one question to all of the museums we're going to, and that's is there one thing in the collection? I'll wait till the horse goes by. There he goes. Is there one thing in the collection that says Byron the most to you out of everything here? What says Byron to you the most?
Aside from the house itself, of course, the Soldiers' Monument is very unique to Byron, being the oldest one, and we do have. Like over in the military room, we have an actual musket from a Byron family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was his great-great-grandfather. So, you know, he brought it to this museum. And so this is Byron's museum. And the top thing that we look for as a local museum is some relationship to at least Ogle County, if not Byron.
Right.
And so we do have a number of things like that in our files that are personal family items that were donated.
Okay.
I love that there's just the focus on the people too. You know, you have all these cool artifacts, but then just to have all this info about these people from Byron.
Yeah.
It's really cool to see.
Well, thanks. Mm-hmm. And people can, what are your hours?
Our typical hours are 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Wednesday through Saturday.
Okay. and people are welcome to stop by and take a look at the underground.
Yes, and it is a free museum.
Yeah.
Which is a neat thing.
And what do they have to do to get their stamp if they're trying to get their stamps?
Just ask me. I'll stamp one for you on the way out.
This is Michelle Donahoe. I'm the executive director with the DeKalb County History Center. Out here at the History Center, we do a wide variety of different things. When people think of a museum, they usually think of exhibits. So we have an exhibit that's open now. It's called Food Gathering Around the Table. It's in collaboration with the Smithsonian. We were one of five organizations in the United States to work with them on this. So that's a huge honor and a huge treasure right here in DeKalb County's backyard. We also have the Joyner History Room, which is where people go to do research. So that's our archives. So anyone doing genealogy or property research, that's your go-to place. So if you're just not sure where to get started and your research is connected to DeKalb County, give us a call. We'll set up an appointment and you're going to be in really good hands. History just doesn't stay within the four walls here at the History Center. We also do a lot out in, again, partnering with different people, libraries, organizations outside the History Center too. So come in, you'll get all sorts of DeKalb County history, but we're also out and about in the community.
So this was a farmstead at some point. Who did it belong to? What's the history on it?
Well, I know we don't have hours, so I'll give it to you in a nutshell. But it originally was the Stark family that owned this. And they had more than five children, so it was a very large family. And they had the property for a very long time. And then they sold it to the Ng family. And those in Sycamore may recognize that name. It's E-N-G-H, the football field at the high school is named after them. They never lived here on the farmstead. They lived down the road where Mary Oaks is today, but they had a tenant farmer and hired help that it was a massive farm. This is one of the, was big in the agricultural community. They both had crops as well as cows for dairy, as well as hogs. And we've got a really great picture here that shows when it was a working farmstead. And now it's Heron Creek. But we still have the buildings here where the tenant farmer lived. And the corn crib are the original ones that are out here. So you still can get a really good feeling for what this was like when it was a working farm.
Okay. Last time I was in Joyner History Room, I was in the library.
Yes. So this has been the county archives. They've moved a couple times. They were in the basement of the courthouse, and then they moved over to the Sycamore Library. And we're usually open 2 days a week. And before the DeKalb County History Center was established in 2018, we were just the Sycamore History Museum. So we are very focused on Sycamore. Then after a wide variety of discussions and community input, it was decided to become a county museum, and then the Joyner History Room, that was kind of a capacity at the library as well, also came out here, and again, their hours are certainly expanded, and it's bigger. There's some more technology available. There's room for more volunteers to work, and I believe it's about 20-some volunteers that we regularly have working in the Joyner History Room, both here and remotely. People don't all read cursive anymore, so we've got people that are transcribing things, and then they send those to us, and then we have people working on obituaries. So we're very flexible. We kind of meet people where they're at, so a lot of our volunteers are here. Like I mentioned earlier, they do research, genealogy, property. But then we also, what you can't see in here, is the backside where all this is stored. So we have, when we're in the exhibit space, we have a really small percentage of things that are on display. But in the back, we have all of our collection. And as much as people love searching things on the internet, it's a small, small, small number of what we have online. We do have an online collection that you can look at, but if you're really interested in doing research, you need to come here and see those original documents that maybe will be digitized someday, but we're not quite there yet.
Can you show us the back room?
Yes.
Okay.
So this is the fun behind the scenes part. So 99% of what we have here at the History Center has been donated. If people have something that they don't think that they, their kids aren't going to want, or they don't have room for it anymore, We do have three main questions before someone makes a donation. So it's, is there a connection to DeKalb County? Is it in good condition? And do we already have a copy of it? So for example, high school yearbooks, we get a lot of those, and unless it's something really special or unique that someone's, you know, written something in there, we generally will not take more than two. That being said, there are a lot of different history groups in DeKalb County, so we also, if like someone comes in here and it's connected to sandwich history, we're gonna give it to the Sandwich Historical Society because that's where people are gonna go to learn that information. A lot of times, as you can imagine, a family has history beyond just one town. So if you've got, you know, oh, we lived here, we moved there, then again, it makes more sense for us to keep that. But we have a great relationship with the other history group, so we let everybody know what we have. So it's definitely a collaboration. Go ahead.
Okay. As total history and stuff nerd, I'm just like going crazy, looking like, oh, I see a bass drum. Is that a bowling bag?
Yes and yes.
Okay, great.
So what we really try and do here is capture ordinary life, because most of us are not mayors or are not the head of a, you know, an international company. We're ordinary people that go bowling. So we have stuff connected to Sycamore Bowl. We have the bowling pins. We have the bowling balls. We have bowling shirts. We have the old scorecards that you used to have to do by hand. We have letters. We have photographs. We have some chairs. You'll see some furniture. Size is also another key factor. As much as we love Wurlitzer and know that Wurlitzer is a big part of our past here, their stuff is really big. Yes. So we get calls on a regular basis about Wurlitzer. Oh, I've got this great piano. Don't you want it? And like, we would love it, but we don't have room for it. So we have other Wurlitzer things. We even have a box that someone made from parts of a piano. So it's kind of my really creative solution to a Wurlitzer piano. But it's a generosity of people that have made us be able to, you know, have this great collection. And also as an organization, it's something that we're committed to, is also recognizing what we're missing. So we have a collection policy that prioritizes those missing voices. So a project that we've been working on for years now is called Arts in Action, where we've been looking at trying to get more of the Black and Latino voices into DeKalb County. And, you know, slow and steady. You have to build a relationship, build trust, but we have really come up with some fabulous pieces, some photos from early 1900s of Black families that were here. And those are treasures, because people are like, oh, no one with color was living here. Yes, yes, they were. And then we have census records that show boxcar communities in Kirkland of people from Mexico that were working on the trains. I'm like, no, we didn't think there were people from Mexico living here until like the 1960s and 70s. And so we're continuing to learn as well. So history isn't just 100 years ago. We're making history every day. And most people, like most of our collection, reflects life into the 1950s and 60s, because we're all still alive, like, yeah, from that period. It's like, wait, if you want my stuff in the museum, that means I'm really old. And it's like, no. You're just important, and we don't want you to throw this stuff away.
Thank you for that. Okay. What here at the DeKalb County History Center says it best to you? Just says DeKalb County.
That's such a hard question. So I go two ways with that, because we do try to, even visually as we tell our story as an organization, one is the courthouse, because that says all of DeKalb County. And I also show pictures of farmers. DeKalb County is still 85% farmland. And while we have large communities like Sycamore and DeKalb, 9 of the 14 communities in DeKalb County have 2,000 people or less. So that rural story is still DeKalb County story. And even those that live in Sycamore and DeKalb still see farms. You don't have to drive far for it. So I think those are the two images that really say DeKalb County.
Okay.
Corn.
Okay, yes. So is there something out in the museum that would represent that, something we could look at?
Yeah, so if we want to walk around through to go to the exhibit, we've got some good pictures of that.
Great.
So the exhibit Food Gathering Around the Table is our current exhibit. It's, as I said, in collaboration with the Smithsonian. So what that really means is they provided the outline for us, and it has national themes. And then we were challenged to come up with the local story. We were able to do it, I would say, for about 90%. What's different about this exhibit compared to when we first opened, we also had, it was called Museum on Main Street is the program through the Smithsonian. They sent us about 17 crates of stuff. Like, they had walls, they had objects and different things. This was just the graphic design work and the text. Oh. And then we had one-on-one time through Zoom calls with the Smithsonian staff, which was really cool. So this was a little different. Like, every object that you see in here is from the History Center or on loan from someone in our community. We do have a panel here, American Indian Food Production. And so we did talk about Potawatomi food traditions. We have traditional farming. So we've got a photo of a farm here that was established in 1835. And that family is still here. It's the Hall family farm. That's just as you go towards Genoa. DeKalb Ag. So you're looking for images. Yeah. DeKalb Ag is certainly something that most people associate with DeKalb County. But then we also talk about contemporary farming, because farming has changed so much, and to remain in solvent, you need to be flexible. So we talk about the farm to table, we talk about the growth of farmers markets, and then also agritourism. So we have some beautiful pictures here from Jonamax, apple cider donuts here, and a cookbook that they put out. So the challenge with doing this work is these panels can take 85 to 100 words. So to talk about the history of agriculture in 85 to 100 words is impossible. We could do an exhibit about each one of these themes. So really what we like to do then is to have programs to complement and take a deeper dive. So when we do this, our exhibits, we really lean heavily into our mission, which is to inspire curiosity in DeKalb County's history. So we want you to come say, well, that's really interesting. Can you tell me more? And then we're doing our job.
Yes.
So with this, we talk about canning, both during World War II, how home canning was really, really important. Sycamore Preserve Works was a big canning factory here in town, and Del Monte. And this, I love the story, because with Del Monte, we didn't have any objects in our collection when we started, connected to Del Monte when we started doing this research. We had a newer volunteer who was like, what do you need help with? I'm like, you know, can you help do some research for the exhibit? I don't know a lot about Del Monte. I know they were here. See what you can find out. Oh my gosh, she knocked it out of the park. She ended up getting this big sign that we have here on loan from their national headquarters in California. So they mailed that to us, as well as the framed advertisement over there for, again, Del Monte. It's a canned pea is on there. Peas and corn were definitely what were grown in this area. For people that worked for Del Monte and were out in the fields, as soon as they see these pea boxes at the top of the case, it just takes them back in time. And they said, just the smell. He's like, I will never forget the smell of fermenting peas. And one of, while we were working on the exhibit, we asked people to share some of their food stories. And we had someone from New York that wrote her memory that she was driving down the street in New York, and she had the smell. And she's like, it brought her back to being 13 years old in DeKalb during pea season. And she said, it was just like that. We also like to be interactive for adults. So we ask people, what food makes you think of DeKalb County? And we have it broken down to the northern, central, and southern part of the county, and you can see lots of different post-it notes. People answer that most often with restaurants, many restaurants that aren't around anymore, but it's just been fun to see. We also took this on the road while we were putting the exhibit together. And then we have people that can't follow the rules, so they put sweet corn and apple cider donuts right underneath the word DeKalb County, because you can get those throughout the county.
So what's your background? How did you get into this?
So I was always a history buff. So I'm actually one of those people in the world that is using her history degree every day. I'm so proud to say that.
Congratulations, that's huge. Yeah. Yeah.
So I was at Loyola in Chicago, and then I got my master's in public history from Loyola as well. And I've worked at larger institutions like the Newberry Library and the Art Institute, and then slowly moved my way west. I was at out in Wheaton, I worked in Geneva, and then I've been here for 19 years. And I enjoy the smaller organizations, because you get to do a lot. It's a very different every day, which of course, has its pros and cons, but I am, you know, we're just surrounded by so many generous people with the volunteers that we have here. We couldn't keep our doors open without them. And just to be surrounded by that energy every day, I'm just eternally grateful for. And we're at the big institutions, you have one job and it's very focused and that's all that you ever get to do. And and that's fine for some people, but I like most days. the variety of it. And the other piece too is just that collaboration and partnership. So while not glamorous, as you leave the exhibit, we have an acknowledgement panel and it's got about 50 names of individuals and 50 different partners that all made this exhibit possible. So while we are small and mighty with two full-time people, we don't work alone. We are dependent on our collaboration and partnerships with people throughout the county. And people don't always think like, well, I don't have a good story to tell. Like, let's sit down. You know how that is.
Oh, yes. We have a lot in common here. This is great. This is really good. So let's say that someone is rummaging around their attic. They find something. They're wondering, what do they do?
Give us a call. It's a lot easier for us to say, I mean, the first question is always, does it have a connection to DeKalb County? And but if they're not sure, bring it in and we'll talk about it. We have a collection committee that reviews everything, so it's not just one person that gets to make the decision. And we have the collection policy, so we've got rules and what we can follow, but it's so much easier to have that conversation instead of like, oh, I just threw that out. I didn't know you'd be interested in that.
Yes.
So, and honestly, sometimes it's therapy, whereas people like, I'm cleaning this stuff out, especially during COVID, people were cleaning out lots of closets, and I just can't throw this away. So if you don't want it, you can throw it away, and we're fine with that. Newspapers are an example. Like, they're digitized, and we have a certain number that we have. They're made to not be preserved. They're made to be read and then disposed of, and so that's the thing that we get a lot in. But again, if we don't have absolutely every single paper that was produced, so give us a call, and we'll have that conversation.
We're a little early. Let's see if the door is locked. Whoa. I thought the mannequin was a person for a second.
Hello.
Hi.
Good. Are you Kat?
My name's Kat Smith. I'm the executive director of the Kishwaukee Valley Heritage Society Museum. So this one here was founded in 1977 by Robert Hoover. He was a Renaissance man with an eclectic collection of all sorts of antiquities. So when the gentleman passed away, he bequeathed a lot of his items to us. So just about everywhere you look on an accessions tag, you're going to see the name Robert Hoover. He's very generous. So what their vision was to show everyone what makes Genoa, Genoa.
I think that's a great question to start with. What does make Genoa, Genoa?
It starts with the Pioneer Trail. A lot of people were coming through Fort Dearborn and moving westward toward the Galena country where there was a lot of mining happening. Hmm. And this was a nice way station for people to stop. There was actually a stagecoach stop historical marker right in front of what used to be the Pacific Hotel, which is now the Credit Union. And they've done a beautiful job maintaining that building, so hats off to them. So we start with the pioneer spirit of the Genoa Cogs, and what brought them to this place was that American dream.
Right.
So they started out with agriculture, and agriculture turned into industry, and then so came forth the railroad, which is represented by this depot, which is the main part of our campus.
So, yeah, I think the first thing you notice, obviously, when you walk in here is trains. Trains, there's the big caboose out front. And you mentioned this was a depot in
the
past?
Yes, it was. It was actually up the road about a half a mile east. They put it on a flatbed and moved it here, set it on its foundation in 1977.
Oh, wow.
So we do have a basement downstairs where the foundation is.
Wow.
And that's mostly office space and archives. We do have some displays down there. And then next came the railway and the caboose.
When did they decommission those cool traditional cabooses like that? You don't see them anymore.
So those kind of went away 60s, 70s, 80s gradually. That one we received in the mid 80s, and it was done on its line. Illinois Central is the last line that it was on. And then this depot here, if you look up on the chalkboard, 1967 is the last time that they ran passenger service from this depot.
It says all passenger service at Genoa suspended effective October 1967.
Wow. And that is the original chalk script.
Wow. Oh, wow. Really?
It's a little spooky, but I love it.
Hasn't that, no one erased it all this time. Wow.
That's really strange. I mean, we write things on chalkboards now, and it's already, it doesn't look half as clear as that.
I think that's a clear testament to what we do here. We keep things from being erased.
And so did Hoover have a connection then to the railroads, or was he just a collector?
Like I said, a Renaissance man with a vast collection of interests. He was a banker in this town, and he ended up setting up a trust for this institution. So he really is our hero. So thank you, Robert Hoover.
I have to say, okay, you guys come over here. I had no idea. We have a 1920s ladies gym suit. Is this like toddler wear today? I mean, it's like a giant.
It's a onesie.
It's a giant onesie.
It's a big onesie, and it would be belted. And
of course.
Then this one is missing the bonnet. So the girls would put all of their hair up in a bonnet. So they kind of would look toddler-like running around. And, I mean, a lot of the activities that they would do, dance, golf, things that are a little bit more sedate. As times went on, Genoa was one of the first to have ladies' sports like basketball and so on.
Very cool. No insult to the 1920s ladies and the gym suit, but, yeah.
Triple-digit numbers, too, unusual.
Yeah.
These displays are really, like, immersive, too, because you have the piano, but then you've added also, like, old sheet music from the 20s, and it's really cool, these displays.
And different ways to listen to music, too.
Oh, wow, so have, these like, are the phonographs?
Yeah,
wow.
These are wax rolls.
Wow.
Holy cow.
Edison wax rolls. So that was the first recorded music, pretty much. Like, yeah, one question we've asked each museum so far is there one object in the collection that says Genoa most to you out of everything here?
Actually, yes, and we're going to have to go into the other building for that.
Okay.
Well done. So I'm going to grab my coat really quickly.
Cool. So we mentioned this was the train depot, and then there is this other building next door. What's this building that we're about to go to?
The Waterworks building. So that used to provide running water for the whole of Genoa, and it was run by a generator magneto. And it was really interesting the way that the gentleman would have to start it. He would kind of get on a treadmill and start building up a charge, and then there was a lever, and he would have to jump from that platform that he was on onto the lever and pull it and get the whole thing started. And I guess you could hear it clear across town, so they would shut it off at about 9-10 o'clock at night, so after that you didn't have running water.
Wow.
But then when the thing went off in the morning, that was kind of like your alarm clock, like your rooster. It's time to get up.
Wow.
Step in. Here we are. It's a little bit dark. I'll turn on the lights for everyone. Something that embodies Genoa. This is the Hoover Mobile. This is Robert Hoover's pride and joy, and we love her too.
Wow, so it's a 1923 Overland.
Yes.
This thing is in immaculate shape.
And it does run. It runs.
It does. She runs like a top. So it's kind of funny. Genoa was never like the big bustling town. Kingston used to be bigger than Genoa at one point in time, if you could believe that.
Wow.
And then there was a fire. And it seems that Kingston never really bounced back from that, and they stayed a little bit more of like a sleepy one-horse town. Hmm. But it was definitely like electric, which started off as Eureka and Craycraft with the telephones. I can show you over in the next room. It was the turn of the century, and communication like this was a very new and exciting thing. And they were on the forefront of that, absolutely cutting edge here in Genoa.
Wow.
So that's honestly what put them on the map. A lot of people moved here, and it was a bustling town. So now I would say it's actually smaller than it was at this point in time.
I had no idea that the telephones were a part of Genoa's history.
Mm-hmm, like certainly. This. At one point in time, this switchboard here, there's one operator and you can only call locally within town. And everybody sort of knew everyone. There was something called a party line where if you picked up, you could hear other people talking and it was a little gravelly. Wow. These are all like electric switchboard and cables that were made here in Genoa.
When young people come in here, how do you explain to them that those devices over there are the same thing as what they are carrying in their pockets?
I have one on the wall, and I'll pull this phone off the wall, and I'll hold the phone up to them and say, have you ever heard this noise before? And they're like, what is that? And I'm like, it's called a dial tone. And then if we keep it off the hook long enough, it makes this awful noise. Wow. Rant, 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 rant.
And do you have to teach them about the rotary
dial?
They
can't quite seem to figure it out because they want to press inside the dial and not pull.
Of course. Can we see the caboose?
Yeah, I think the caboose would be the best way to end this here.
They used to call it Old Crummy. That was its original name when we got it.
Crummy?
Old Crummy.
And why did they call it that?
She had a really good life of service. She's seen an awful lot.
Yeah.
So on the Illinois Central, this caboose used to go from Chicago to New Orleans. So it's like that Willie Nelson song, The City of New Orleans. That's from this train line. And you can see this is where the gentleman would bonk.
You know, there's two bunks right next to the pile of coal. You'd be hanging out.
And then this cupola, so they could see down the line.
Oh, this is cool. So there's some raised up seats. It reminds me when you're at the Metra going to Chicago, and there's that second level. It's like that, but everything's made out of wood.
And this, as far as I'm concerned, is one of the best views in Genoa.
Oh. Okay, we're out the back. Oh, wow.
See both trains.
Look at that.
And then my neighbor's the warehouse on Park. Hi, Bill and Mary. Beautiful sunsets. And like I said, when you see both trains running at the same time, it's kind of magical. And then the caboose still has one surprise.
El Baño.
You knew. That's the question everyone had.
Does it just go straight just down to the ground?
Right on the tracks.
Spencer, you
want to
give it a try?
During the pandemic, I was looking to start my master's studies, and one of the things that would have been required was an internship. So I started here interning, and it turns out I don't need to go any further, just like the pioneers of old. I was on my journey, I found this place, and now I'm using my education to branch out with the high school to do things in the community as far as education and making people proud of where they come from. And this really, DeKalb County is a magical place where the city ends and the corn begins.
Hey, you know, Spencer and Sue, at the end of a museum, my feet always hurt and I'm always hungry and thirsty, but I don't feel like that. I've been to three museums and I'm not tired.
And you're not bored.
And I'm not bored. Those were all interesting.
Yeah, yeah. We've got a lot of great history hidden all over the place here in Northern Illinois.
I bet we missed some.
There's probably a lot more that we missed.
What we'd love to hear is our listeners' favorites. Your favorite little local museum?
What museum did we miss? And it doesn't have to be a historical museum. I mean, there's like a, is there a museum, like a chili museum? I'd like to go to that.
Right now it sounds great.
Hot it's chocolate really cool. Museum?
Museum of sledding.
Let us know if there is a museum we missed. Email us at rocks@niu.edu. You can also send us on another adventure. Let us know what we should check out here in the region.
Amen.
So bad.
Good team.
Yay.
We got these.
Yes. Did you guys steal anything from the museum?
Oh, I was going to ask you a question. I have a question to ask you guys.
Okay.
If there was fires in all the museums we saw, what one object what one object would you steal from each museum if you could?
Oh.
The Justin Bieber mannequin.
That's a pretty good one.
That's a good idea.
I would take the penny farthing from this one.
And you could just
put it in my
right away on it too.
Just slip it in my coat pocket.
Yeah,
just get out with it.
And I think maybe I'd bust out of there writing Wally Thoreau's Penny Farthing, the founder of Pumpkin Parade.
We saw the statue of that. There's an actual Penny Farthing.
It's his.
That
actual, it's there.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yep.
Used to ride that in the parade.
Docents and museum operators, you're on notice. We've got sticky fingers here at the Under Rocks.